Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Tuesday, December 6th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Good afternoon. Happy St. Nicholas Day.
Oh, okay.
St. Nicholas, as listeners may know, was known for selling all his possessions and giving his money away to the poor. He was raised as a devout Christian and dedicated his whole life to serving the sick and suffering. And of course, legendary stories about him later became part of the inspiration for the modern day Santa Claus. There you have it.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right.
Good.
Lingering sinus infection, but it's good to be alive.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, it is. And even gold was a little bit of alive today. It had some movement to the upside, $3 in the New York spot price aftermarket at $1,773. Silver, though, not so much, but only down by 5 pennies at $22.29. And you got to remember, we did have a little bit of a pullback. We briefly touched 23 not too long ago, but platinum was down $9 at $998. Palladium was down $33 at $1,918. The USDX today, up 0.26 at 105.54. So we'll have to see if they're going to run it again, but who knows what their little game is. And since we're not privy to the rules and regulations of the games that they play, the Dow was down 351 points, 33,596. The S&P was down 57 at 3,941. NASDAQ was down 2% and 11,014. European markets, all negative, all under 1%, though. Asian markets, the Hang Seng was the only one that was in negative territory, but you know, barely the other two were just holding. 10-year yield still 3.52, so looks like it's found a new spot that it kind of likes, around the 3.5% level. Oil, that was all negative, and natural gas again dropped another 3.75%, 5.37. And I think we should start. I'm just thinking of it right now. The national price for diesel fuel. I don't know if that broke $5 yet. I know there's a. Well, that can't be $3.39. No, it's $4.96 as of yesterday. So it's still up there hovering around that $5 level. And, you know, Dave, you know, people were rejoicing about our lower prices, which is a good thing. You know, there's all kinds of reports that we're going to have gasoline below $3, and that's a great thing. I'm happy about that. Trust me. Very happy. But you're still looking at diesel that really runs this country with our, you know, our manufacturing, our farming, our trailers, our trucks that delivers products. They're still having a tough time at that $5 level diesel. So that hasn't come down, I don't believe, as much as the regular auto gas, you know, regular gasoline has. But so that's something to continue to think about. Excuse me.
Think of the Californians where it's $5.82. It's a lot more expensive way out there.
Are they still at $5.82?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a problem with barking dogs, but I have a problem with squeaking. So, Dave, not you squeaking. Jamie Dimon, he's squeaking. He's saying that inflation could lead to a recession. Well, how many millions of dollars do you get paid, Jamie Dimon? And how many times have you been bailed out of your felons and you're not accountable for anything. So are we supposed to pay attention to you now that you're talking about how inflation could tip the U.S. economy into a recession next year? But that's what he's telling his consumers and companies. You know, he thinks that they're currently in good shape, but he doesn't think it's going to last that much longer. Consumers have $1.5 trillion in excess savings from pandemic stimulus programs. I really find that hard to believe, considering the amount of debt, Dave, that they're increasing on their credit cards. So are they keeping their savings and using their credit cards? Don't know.
No, but, I think that's the case. I think
you think that's what they're doing.
It's a combination of those two things. Yeah, they are mutually exclusive. So it could be one end and the other, and I think that's the case. Well, if this 1.5 in excess savings is correct, which I've seen, 1.4, 1.6, so that's a plausible number. And we know how credit card spending has increased. The credit card debt has increased again. That's people looking for the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's true. It's probably what I would do, too, because you know what? People know they can walk away from their credit cards. You know, so keep my savings and walk away if I can't afford to pay or if I lose my job. I still got savings and I can walk away from my credit card debt. So, they ought to put that savings into gold, though. It's a little more private. But anyway, he also noted that the pressure for borrowers and the Fed's benchmark interest rate, 5%, he still don't think that that number, the 5% rate, is sufficient to subdue any types of inflation, Dave.
Yeah, the only good thing I saw coming out of this interview was his characterization of cryptocurrencies as a complete sideshow that's rife with criminality. Criminality and just lots of blind investing. He also said globalization was in the process of being partially reversed with the restructuring of supply chains. Amid these heightened geopolitical tensions. So, you know, as Melody alluded to, you know, Diamond's been around for some time. He's been at the helm of J.P. Morgan Chase since 2006. And, of course, under his leadership, the bank became the biggest U.S. bank by asset size when it weathered the Great Recession, now the aftermath of the pandemic. But this bank's also a five-time felon under his helm, having agreed to deferred prosecution agreements and big-time fines during that period. Of course, one of the bank's major crimes, as we've talked about, was manipulating the precious metals markets, for which two lower-level traders have gone to prison. So, not a leader by example. He says the American banking system's unbelievably sound in a million different ways. Our capital cup runneth over. Well, we'll tell you why Diamond is oh so wrong about that in today's second segment, Melody.
Yeah, you know, it's he is oh so wrong, but it really is incredible what's going on, and but anyway, you know, I don't know, Dave, but you know, people, I think it's people's, and I really do believe it's Wall Street and the markets that really, people don't pay much attention to some of the things that we talk about. But they pay attention to Wall Street. And if the Wall Street's doing good, they make decisions that it's going to continue. And that they listen to those who believe there's no issues coming our way, like things are okay, because that's the only thing that makes sense. When we continue to see you know, these interest rates rise. You know, we continue to see inflation linger. But there's these small business formations. They're rising. And I don't know what they would be basing their decisions on. We certainly have seen a small lull earlier this year. New business formations have recovered to the elevated levels that were seen last fall. And their owners are quickly hiring. And this is all according to the University of Maryland economist John Haltewanger. Do you really believe that's a name, or do you believe this person's name is made up? Just asking, Dave. But if the data persists, the resilience in small business formation points to a new plateau of activity. And, you know, hopefully it would add millions of jobs to the economy. But the risks include the Fed itself choking off financial conditions so much that, you know, the small business boom is smothered. Even with the volatility and the surge earlier in the pandemic, we're still 30% higher in 2022 than in 2023, he said. But small business people are being optimistic about the future, and that's a good sign. So again, what are these people looking at when you compare 2022 to 2019? I don't know. The Census Bureau reported almost 433,000 new business applications in October, and that was up from 313,000 in December of 2019. Oh, government money. That's where it's coming from. That's where it's coming from. That's the optimism. Yeah, okay, I get it now. New business applications soared, topping up 552,000 in July 2020, declining by 350,000 by Christmas, rebounding by 500,000 by mid-2021. So the largest number of new businesses opened have been in non-store retailing, which surged as shoppers avoided stores in 2020. So what is the booming business that everyone's opening, Dave?
Well, the second biggest category is in professional services. Mm-hmm. And they're attributing that to the switch to remote work during the height of the pandemic, with the largest number of new entrants coming from the suburbs. Again, as workers move their own workplaces and spending their lunch and other services to where they live rather than city centers, you know, 10, 15, 20 plus miles away where they used to actually go to the office. Now, that's returning somewhat, but it certainly could help to explain why the restaurant industry, long a leader of small employers in city centers, is still down 300,000 jobs since when the pandemic began. So the biggest question has been whether these new businesses are growing fast enough in general to create jobs for anyone other than their founders. And Haltewanger says the answer to that is yes. Apparently, they're now creating as many as 1 million new jobs a quarter. Now, it doesn't say how many quits or layoffs there have been in this sector. But if that lasts, that means 4 million small business jobs a year. A net gain of 1.5 million. There are actually 2.5 million lost with other small businesses closing. But still an impact in the opposite direction that Jerome Powell and his buddies are looking for in their inflation fight. So, you know, Moody Analytics economist Steve Collier saying that a lot of these new companies appear to be grabbing many workers who've been switching industries in the last year and a half. And that's accounting for at least part of the wage pressures that larger employees are reporting. But how long this continues, as interest rates continue to rise over the next, over the coming months, and it sounds like year, time will tell. I mean, it just doesn't seem logical that, particularly if there are startup loans involved, that as interest rates continue to, you know, get up to 5, 6, 7% in the personal level, that's going to be real tough. And I can't imagine that's going to provide further incentive, Melody. If the Fed actions lead to a recession next year, as we're seeing already in the housing industry.
Well, no, usually though, you know, what you often see is these, you know, the people late to the party. You know, so, you know, and these very well could be those that are late to the party, to where, you know, they start up these businesses, and you know, if they were starting from home, because that's how they, you know, that's what it kind of sounded like, that these are the people that, you know, decided to work from home.
Yeah, the fear of missing
reality
out.
Reality strikes, you know, and it's difficult. It's not as easy as it was when you're working from home and you decide to go out on your own all of a sudden. It is difficult. And many, I would think many of them would fail after a short, you know, a couple years, 5 years or something like that, especially when the economy takes a turnaround. And I mean, how many services can this country provide? You know, but anyway, it's kind of interesting. But, you know, we often talk about the bond market and those who believe the Fed and so forth. But the bond market's not buying the Fed's story. You know, we know that the Fed's have sort of made a pretty clear message. At least they're saying so now, that they intend to slow down the speed of interest rate increases. But envision eventually raising them higher and maybe keeping them high for a much longer period of time. And the bond market kind of isn't buying that story. Futures markets imply that the Fed will be cutting interest rates starting next year, much sooner than the Fed policies envision. If the market pricing proves accurate, an economic slump is going to bring down inflation, and the Fed will react by reversing recent rate increases. I hear the music. We're heading into a break. We'll finish up when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up with our weekly newsletter. And boy, I'll tell you what, we have been having a hard time on these programs. Butch has a bad voice. I have a bad voice. You've got a bad voice. We're all in three different states. But it's awfully damp here on the Eastern Shore today. So, you all right, Dave?
I am okay.
Okay. Heading into the break, we were talking about the bond market and futures markets kind of, as I said, imply that the Fed is going to be cutting interest rates a little bit sooner than what they want to. If we continue to see market pricing proves accurate, supposedly a little bit of a slump is going to bring down inflation, and then the Fed would react by reversing the recent rate increases. The Fed officials are right. They're going to keep tightening on the economy to try to vanquish inflation or at least try to bring it down closer to their fake 2% goal. Is this a game they're going to be – is this a – it's more of a teeter-totter, isn't it, that they're trying to accomplish and to keep it balanced without one end hitting the ground and sending the other one flying through the sky, I guess.
It's a dangerous game. All the mainstream pundits, claiming that, are grasping for straws when it comes to looking for signals, signs, quotes, what have you, that will all lead to a soft landing and not slam the economy into a deeper recession or even a mild recession lasting a long period of time. That's not good either. But I think that's what we're seeing, because I think most of these people are big holders in the stock and bond markets, and they don't want to see them crash. So I think, the investors, the traders, the pundits all trying to do their best to prop up the financial markets at the same time. The Fed's not trying to destroy the economy, obviously, but I think they're having a difficult time finding that balancing, that equilibrium.
Yeah, and they're going to continue to find it difficult because I think it's too big for them to balance like they have in the past. They've been successful in the past. You can't take that away from them. I'm not congratulating them because in the meantime they're destroying, a lot of things. But, they've been able to do their job that they're supposed to do. And again, I don't agree with it, but I think now it's too big. And they know where what's going to happen. And you're right. You have everybody looking for something. But the thing of it is that something isn't going to confirm what they want it to because it can't. And it's, eventually, I don't know when, that's what we've always been saying, but it defies gravity sometimes, Dave. I mean, it's just like, really? Defies reality. And the world that we live.
Yeah. We've talked about the yield curve on this program regularly. And, even as of the end of July, the 10-year Treasury bond was yielding more than the 2-year bond, the 30, the 90-day bond, as it should I said, that's the normal scenario. Since then, that spread has reversed, and it's now created the widest yield curve inversion since the early 80s. And we know what happened back then. I mean, as of this morning, two-year treasuries were yielding just about 4.4%, while the 10-year treasuries were just about 3.6. The three-month treasury now is the same yield as the two-year. So that, you know, it's almost, what, an 80 basis point difference. The lower end of the yield curve are almost a percent higher than the 10-year. And, you know, that's not good. I mean, it implies that the current rate hiking campaign is going to be followed by years of cheaper money again. Now, the future markets, you know, imply that the Fed will be cutting rates by sometime next fall. That's according to, you know, the FedNow tracker at the Atlanta Fed. But that's not what Fed officials have been saying. You know, New York Fed president said, you know, I do think we're going to need to keep restrictive policy in place for some time. I expect that to continue through at least next year. At least through next year. And Jerome Powell, you know, just, well, he's not being as direct and explicit. I mean, he's more of the leader of Fed speak, but, you know, he's been sending mixed signals, but has made sort of clear that, as Melody said earlier, that you know, the Fed might not be hiking 75 basis points consistently from here on. But, you know, even if it's 50 basis points or 25 basis points every month for the next year, well, you know, we're looking at significantly higher interest rates than we were a year ago.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. You got these multinational corporations that can't afford higher interest rates. I mean, that's the only reason they're going to ease off, just like during the, as I said this before, during the Trump administration, when Powell was raising rates and, you know, squawking, you got to stop. He had to stop because they couldn't afford the interest. They can't afford to service the debt. And that's where we're at. So that's the game that they're playing. And the only losers are going to be those holding, you know, investments in the retirement accounts and, their pensions. You know, yesterday we talked about the $65 trillion in derivatives. Today, Pam and Russ Martins remind us today, Wall Street on Parade, that the Treasury Secretary has the dual role of chairing the Financial Stability Oversight Council, whose role is to provide comprehensive monitoring of the stability of our nation's financial system. Heads of each of the federal agencies that supervise Wall Street and the too big to fail banks sit on the meetings of the FSOC. I believe this is the same as the, what am I trying to think of, Dave? The, come on, I'll think of it.
I don't know.
The FSOC was created under the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation to prevent a replay of the off-balance sheet derivatives. Excuse me. That crashed the U.S. economy in 2008, forced an unprecedented and secret $29 trillion bailout of U.S. and foreign global banks by our wonderful Federal Reserve. But the Martins say if Janet Yellen is aware of the latest threat to financial stability, she's not publicly disclosing the details. And she wouldn't. Of course she wouldn't. They point to a report released yesterday for the Bank for International Settlements showing the amount of derivative debt that's not being carried on the regular statistical reports because it's held off the balance sheet. These derivatives, the Martins say, consist of foreign exchange swaps, forwards, and currency swaps. And the major concern, they warn, is the line from the report, quote, for banks headquartered outside the United States, dollar debt from these instruments is estimated at $39 trillion, more than double their on-balance sheet dollar debt and more than 10 times their capital. Dave.
Listen to that. Let me quickly repeat that. $39 trillion more than 10 times their capital. You know, and the Fed uses these numbers, their on balance debt and capital, for their annual periodic systemic risk tests. This is huge, I think. Is Martin's right? Global foreign banks are an integral part of the U.S. financial system.
Absolutely.
So when there's a crisis like there was in 2008 or the pandemic, the Fed bails out these mega foreign banks along with the mega domestic banks. Why, the Martins ask? Well, because the trading units of these banks, as well, you know, foreign and domestic, make up what the Fed calls its primary dealers. And those dealers, 20-some of them, are contractually obligated to make purchases of U.S. treasuries at each and every treasury auction and to trade with the New York Fed to carry out the Fed's monetary policy. As the Martins warn, a huge concern for Yellen Congress and, well, all of us Americans in general, is that all it takes is one heavily interconnected, interdependent global bank to set off a wave of falling dominoes in the global financial markets, and then here we go again. Now, there's no question that the counterparties to a significant amount of that $39 trillion in off-balance sheet derivative debt at foreign banks are the big five derivative banks here in the U.S. J.P. Morgan Chase, there they are again, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, Bank of America, and Morgan Stanley. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency's most recent derivatives report for the second quarter of this year shows that those five bank holding companies alone had $221.5 trillion in notational derivative exposures. $221 trillion. That's 84% of the derivative exposures of the largest 25 bank holding companies in the country. Melody, if that's not something to worry about in this age of leveraged debt, I don't know what is.
But you know what, Dave?
But
it doesn't seem that anybody cares about it or worries about it. I mean, this is huge. And this is when we talk about, you know, the resets and, you know, all the it's you know, you can blame it on multiple things, but it's really the amount of debt and these derivatives. I mean, it's huge. And we just keep bailing everybody out on our dime. It's like, when is it going to stop? How is it? It's going to stop. Oh, trust me, it's going to stop. But what's going to make it stop? How is it going to stop? When is it going to stop? I mean, $221 trillion? $321? $521? I mean,
it's crazy. You know, if corporate media, whether, you know, on the so-called left or the so-called right, if they had the integrity and their execs had the courage, or if they were more independent of Wall Street and these big banks who finance a lot of their operations, perhaps we'd, you know, there'd be more reporting on this and more people would know about this. But since that isn't the case, I'm not sure it ever will be, certainly in our lifetimes. We can expect more of the same.
Well, more of the same until they can't do it anymore.
Yeah,
and
until
will be in our, and that will be in our lifetime, you know, unless we conk out tonight. But oh, I definitely believe this will be in our lifetime, that they no longer can control it. And there's that domino effect. And, you know, we still haven't heard the last of the crypto collapse. You know, I can't even imagine what they're funneling in that to keep that from coming totally undone. But you know, the contagion from the crypto, that doesn't happen. The contagion doesn't happen overnight. You can see the contagion beginning to unwind, I don't know, months, next year. I mean, we're just talking about, you know, one or two of them right now, but, you know, what it really has impacted, we'll know next year. But changing topics a little bit, again, we're seeing more robotics that are coming to big retail. Fresh off the news in October that Walmart had acquired Alert Innovation. I believe we talked about it. A robotics automation company. Amazon has just announced the launch of Sparrow, which it calls a robotic system that streamlines the fulfillment process. I think it was just yesterday we said Amazon was going to be laying off 20,000 people. There you go. Thank you, robotic system. And they say it's because things are slowing down. Well, maybe it's because they're kicking people out and changing and doing a robotic system. Maybe that's the real culprit. The back and forth battle of bleeding edge technology currently between the two retail titans is, you know, reshaping the industry landscape by innovation, automating. It's also ultimately reshaping the future of works by redefining the role of over a million human Amazon warehouse workers. Sparrow uses artificial intelligence to recognize and distinctively handle millions of items. The ability to recognize various items represents a major technological advancement in leveraging AI as part of the order picking and fulfillment process.
Great.
Really? Last year, well, I guess it's better than using people who are in prison. You know? Anyway, because they do, I can remember when they used people in prison where you would give them your credit card and they would take your orders for mail order, but I don't think they do that anymore. But last year, Amazon workers picked, stowed, or packed over 13 million packages a day. With the assistance of Sparrow Robotic Assistance, the company expects that number to increase. Using machine learning algorithms, embedded cameras, and a custom gripper designed to pick out items piled in shelves or bins so they can be packed into orders for shipping to customers, Sparrow will take on repetitive tasks within Amazon warehouses and drive efficiently by automating critical steps along the fulfillment process. The increased reliance on robots for warehouse tasks is shifting the balance of power from machines supporting people to eventually people supporting the machines. Now, that's even creepy. What's creepier is we're already heading into our break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. Dave Allen with you. Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, she's at 1-800-375-4188. To paraphrase the late Everett Dirksen, a million here, a million there, and well, pretty soon you're talking about real money. Of course, Dirksen was referring jokingly to $1 billion back then, not a million, the late 60s. In 1969, when he made the quip, the state-of-the-art USS Enterprise aircraft carrier cost $451 million, close to $500 million, or about 0.5% of GDP at the time. Fast forward 50-some years, the military's latest generation of carriers, the USS Gerald Ford, cost $13 billion, or 5% of GDP, about 29 times more than the Enterprise. You got a good deal, Captain Kirk. Now, a dollar surely isn't what it used to be. I mean, are you sure this isn't your grandparents' $1 million? According to the latest Global Wealth Report, there are more millionaires in the U.S. and globally today than ever before, with well over 24 million of them in our country alone. Yet, having all that dough wherever you may have parked it, in the bank, under your mattress, paper investments, gold, silver, whatever, well, aside from gold and silver, it's offering a lot less security than it used to. Now, thanks to high inflation and severe volatility in the financial markets, caused in large part by a massive growth in the nation's money supply. In fact, since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913 to manage the nation's money supply, ironically, to ensure economic stability, there's been an astounding loss of purchasing power in the U.S., 99%. By the late 1960s, the number of dollars in circulation was too high to be backed up by U.S. gold reserves. So President Nixon ended the direct convertibility of U.S. dollars to gold in 1971, putting the gold standard out of its misery and ending the limit on the amount of currency that could be printed. M2 money supply in the U.S. has since literally leapt through the stratosphere to the land of Oz over the last two decades, skyrocketing from a mere $4.6 trillion in 2020 to $19.5 trillion last year. Non-M2 money supply includes cash, checking deposits, and other non-cash assets that can easily be converted into cash. The effects of the rise in money supply were certainly exacerbated by the Great Recession and more recently by the pandemic. In fact, well, roughly one-fifth of all dollars in circulation, $3.4 trillion, was created in 2020 alone. Dave Goodsell, who's the director of the Natixis Center for Investor Insight, observes that that mark, a million smackers, is easier to obtain these days, but it may not deliver what we expect. Yes, fewer Americans, including millionaires, are feeling good about their financial standing and future. Jessica Stickler reports that even among high net worth individuals, almost 60% of them, except they'll have to keep working longer, and over one third, 36%, worry that retirement may not even be an option. Those figures come from the latest survey data from the Natixis Investment Managers. In fact, more than a third of millionaires said their ability to be financially secure in retirement is going to take quote, a miracle. A separate study from Northwestern Mutual finds that Americans now expect they're going to need 1.25 million, 1.25 million, to retire comfortably as higher costs strain household budgets. That's a significant 20% jump from the 1.05 million that survey respondents cited just a year ago. What a year of high inflation the difference makes. Goodsell notes, a million may seem like a lot, but many people are surprised when they do the math and realize that 4% of 1 million is only $40,000 per year. Now, that 4% is a rule, a popular guideline for retirees to determine how much money they can live on each year without fear of running out before they die, based on, well, current life expectancies. However, Morningstar says that given current market expectations and longer life, the 4% rule may no longer be feasible. $40,000 is usually quite a bit less than these individuals are likely used to living on anyway. It's equivalent to about $3,333 a month before taxes. Indeed, even if you include Social Security income, where the maximum 2023 benefit will be about a little over $4,500 a month, 85% of which presumably would be subject to federal income tax, the resulting $8,000 monthly income is still about one-third what one group says is the monthly income of the typical millionaire household, $300,000 a year. So because of market volatility, the average 401k balance is now down 23% from a year ago to $97,000, according to Fidelity Investments, the larger 401k provider in the U.S. So Goodsell surmises, well, maybe you have that $1 million, but you've taken a 20% hit on that. And on top of that, prices are higher. Now, Shenandoah University finance professor Clifford Tees writes, borrowing and printing up trillions and trillions of dollars just isn't real. It's a special form of deceit we economists call inflation. Indeed, if Dixon were alive today, given the massive loss in purchasing power since his late 60s pronouncement, he'd certainly be saying a trillion here, a trillion there. And pretty soon you're talking about real money. The moral? Well, with the fiat dollar and a Congress and White House forced by dark campaign money to try to buy our votes with profligate spending, higher inflation is here to stay. Protect your retirement nest egg, my friend. Make sure your assets are adequately diversified with plenty of gold and silver. Now, excuse me, I'm sorry. Our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets last night. In addition to Melody's financial market recap of last week and the weekly blog from McIlvaney Wealth's Doug Nolan called Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I have an article on last Friday's CEO Economic Outlook, which said that CEO sentiment among the largest companies in the country has fallen for the fourth straight quarter this year. And yet those economic jitters haven't sent CEO confidence jumping out of their high-rise offices or even to their favorite headhunters just yet. In fact, Axios's Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin say their hiring and capital spending plans are more consistent with growth slowdown than outright economic contraction, aka recession. The latest CEO Economic Outlook Index from the Business Roundtable fell by 11 points last month to 73, continuing the gradual but steady slide that began early in the year. A look back shows that it's first time since the pandemic was declared in 2020 that the index has fallen below its long-run average of 84. Brown and Irwin note, however, that the current level reflects a soft patch but not a full-blown recession, like the Eurozone crisis in 2012 and a period of global economic softening, in late 2015. We certainly could blame the CEOs if their outlooks were even dimmer. GM CEO Mary Barra, who currently chairs the Business Roundtable, says, with continued supply chain challenges and inflation uncertainty, many CEOs remain cautious about domestic plans and expectations for the next 6 months. I mean, just look at China, where U.S. manufacturing orders are down 40%. As a result of that big shortfall, Worldwide Logistics says it's expecting Chinese factories to shut down 2 weeks earlier than usual for the Chinese Lunar New Year. Chinese New Year's Eve falls on January 21st, 2023, and the 7 days after the holiday are considered a national holiday when most people don't work. Supply chain research firm Project 44 reported that vessel TEU, that's the 20-foot equivalent unit, volume from China to the U.S. has seen a 21% decline in total vessel container volume just between August and November. Asia-based global shipping firm HLS warned it seems to be a very bad time for the shipping industry. We have the combination of declining demands and overcapacity as new tonnage enters the market. And that's not a healthy combination. What's more, HLS is predicting a further 2.5% decline in those container volumes and a nearly 5 to 6% increase in capacity next year, which will continue to negatively impact freight rates in 2023. And then, of course, OPEC Plus, it's the group of 23 oil-producing nations, including Russia, recently decided to stick to its existing policy of reducing oil production by 2 million barrels a day. That's about 2% of world demand from, well, November until the end of next year. Not the worst case scenario that could have happened, but not good for world economies either. Energy analysts had expected OPEC Plus to consider fresh price supporting production cuts ahead of a possible double blow to Russia's oil revenues. The EU is ready to ban all imports of Russian seaborne crude starting, yesterday, I believe, while the U.S. and other members of the G7 will impose a $60 per barrel price cap on the oil that Russia sells going forward. That's a move the Kremlin has previously warned would cause more harm than good. We shall see. But international crude oil prices have fallen below $90 a barrel from more than $120 in early June. That's weakening demand in China, fostering growing fears of worldwide recession. Brown and Irwin report upbeat plans for sales growth, plus hiring and capital spending among the 142 CEOs of the company surveyed by Business Roundtable. But they add those expectations have come down from last year's nosebleed levels. Roundtable CEO Josh Bolton says that the Fed had been pumping the brakes to rein in inflation, and the survey results are unsurprising in that context. Brown and Irwin even say the survey results point to the Fed's desired outcome of inflation falling back closer to its 2% target. That outcome would be an economic slowdown, the so-called soft landing, without a deeper prolonged recession and including only a modest increase in unemployment. But after all, the Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown of Ohio reminded us in a Sunday talk show, the Fed's dual mandate is stable prices and full or maximum employment. Not or, it's and. An inflation-fighting program that results in significantly higher joblessness is not a worthy goal or outcome or consistent with the Fed's statutory responsibilities. And last Friday's government jobs report for November showed wages rising alongside strong job growth, the latest sign suggesting that demand is, well, too strong for the Fed's liking. Non-farm payrolls increased 263,000 for the month. Economists were looking for just around 200,000. Add insult to injury, average hourly earnings boiling 0.6% for the month. A double one Wall Street estimate. Wages were up 5.1% on an annualized basis, well above the 4.6% expectation. If that kind of jobs and wage growth continues much longer, it will likely push the Fed to act even more aggressively in the coming year to slow down that demand. Monthly non-farm payrolls have been up an average of 392,000 versus 562,000 for last year. And demand for labor continues to outpace supply with about 1.7 positions open for every available worker. Fitch Ratings chief economist Brian Colton observed, the Fed's tightening monetary policy, but somebody forgot to tell the labor market. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has for months been stressing the importance of getting labor force participation back to its pre-pandemic level. But the November jobs report, that showed participation falling slightly to 62.1%, the lowest level of the year. As the labor force fell by 186,000, is now just below its pre-pandemic level. But you know what? I'm not sure whose shoes I'd want to be in less these days, Fed policymakers or the CEOs. It's tough going out there. We'll see how things turn out. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listener. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for tuning in to Financial Survival. Have a good evening. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.